And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your Friday. A lot of you have been started for a good while now. Could be raining off and on here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here. Chase McCabe down in Hotlanta, where it could be raining there too. Game 3 of the World Series. What is the forecast looking like for tonight's Game 3?
Well, hello, boys. Hope you're doing well. Good to be here from Atlanta. Real quick, thank you to 680 The Fan in Atlanta for putting me up today in their beautiful studios. So awesome to be here. It's cloudy right now. It was spitting a little bit of rain, but, I mean, to be honest, the forecast doesn't look great for later on tonight. I know rain is definitely in the forecast. It's going to be hit or miss. I mean, I think they get it in, but right now it's only 36% chance, but it's just scattered. So, you know, when you have to deal with that and the pop-ups, that's kind of tough, and it's going to be about 50 degrees. So a little chilly at first pitch, but I'm just happy to be here. I'm excited. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's supposed to be chilly here this weekend, so I'm not surprised. Looks like we're going to finally get a little fall weather.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, almost November. So, chili is kind of a part of the deal. So, we can't, you know, get too spoiled.
It is. We are heading into November. Hard to believe. Gosh. 3 more days, right? Yeah, Sunday's Halloween.
Yep.
And Monday will be November. Also, some other things that happened since we were off the air. We talked yesterday a lot about the Blackhawks situation, a lot about Joel Quenneville. We had Elliot Friedman join us. We discussed it in length yesterday, and we knew that Joel Quenneville was meeting with the commissioner yesterday at 1 o'clock, and they had that meeting, and it looks like Joel Quenneville is out as the Florida Panthers head coach.
Yep.
But it's not looks like. He is.
He's resigned, fired, whatever you want. As I said yesterday and this week, look, you can call it whatever you want, but he's not making it, and he gone. He's not making it.
Yeah. He, I don't think anyone's surprised by that. I'm not. It's the right move, in my opinion. I have a lot of respect for Joel Quenneville, the coach, but I don't know if you guys saw yesterday on The Point on ESPN, John Tortorella, who we all know is a very outspoken individual. You know, the media, he gives it to the media sometimes, but what he said on The Point was quite on point, pun intended. And he basically said, you know, whether it's Joel Quenneville or Stan Bowman or Kevin Cheveldayoff or anybody there, and it's what I brought up yesterday, you're telling me that not one man stood up and said, hey, this is wrong. This is absolutely wrong. And he goes, you know, I just can't wrap my head around that, of not standing up and saying, this is wrong, marching the guy down the hallway and out the door. And nobody did that. And that's where Joel Quenneville messed up. That's where everybody involved did this wrong, of whether it was said, hey, I got this, I'm going to handle this, we're going to handle this internally, what have you. It didn't get handled right. And nobody stood up and said, hey, you're not handling it right. And so Joel Quenneville now has to live with that and pay the price of that. And I hope he grows from it. Again, from a hockey sense, I respect him as a coach. He's a great coach, but he messed up in the human category. And
well, when you say grow from it, you know, we've had so many examples of this to grow from it, and it just I'm still consider me not an optimist. You know, how many more examples do we have to have of this in sports? Just sports alone, because that's what we do. How many more sports examples do we need on the college ranks, high school ranks, pro ranks, before administrators and people in charge, you know, stop looking the other way. I don't know. There's been plenty of examples for him to grow from and learn. I understand that we're talking about 11 years, but even in those last – and a lot of things have happened in the last 11 years. But, I mean, you know, sitting here today, how many more of these stories you need to read and watch play out before, if you're in that position and something unfortunately like that is presented to you, you know, you don't step up and do the right thing. I mean, at this point, you can't be clueless, right? Like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know what to do. I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, and here's the other part. Like you just said a key part. It was 11 years ago. So you mean to tell me that you've just been sitting on this for 11 years? Like you did, even though he didn't do enough. I'm just going to use Quenneville as the example here. Even though he didn't do enough at the time, it might be a little bit better if he comes out at some point, you know, not now, and says, "Hey, you know, what happened with this? Why did we let this get this far? You know, this is what happened. There was an incident, you know, but he didn't own up to it until he had to, until he got, you know, the evidence came out that he knew what was going on. That's an even, you know, another part of this issue of like, you knew and you've been sitting on it for 11 years and still didn't do anything."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I try, guys, not to overreact in the moment. I like to try to absorb everybody's point of view before I really come down hard. And so that's kind of where I was yesterday. It was really interesting. I wanted to keep absorbing information. I watched Jackie Redmond. You saw John Tortorella on The Point, Chase. I watched Jackie Redmond on NHL Tonight. A real emotional thing. I think the more removed we get from it, the more we get the information. For me, I get even more sad, more angry of how it was handled. You know, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, you know, of how that could have happened. I try to be rational about it, but the more you hear, the more you're disappointed with what happened. So, you know, I think it became very inevitable that Joel Quenneville was going to have to step down. So where does he go from here? That's a question for down the road. And in the immediate, you've now got Kevin Cheveldae off, the GM of the Jets, who is going to meet with Gary Bettman today. And I wonder how differently he'll be viewed being in his position. He was in that meeting. He was the assistant GM. He wasn't in as much of a position of authority, but at the same time, he was there. So that's the next thing that we wonder about.
He knew. That's the thing that I can't let go. He knew. He knew. He knew what was going on. And I, whether it's authority or not, I said this yesterday, I don't care what your title is. If you find out something like that, because I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, and you guys know this because you know me better than anybody, if something like that happened and nothing was getting done about it, I don't care if I lose my job as long as the right thing is done. I'm going to stand up for people. I'm going to stand up for my people. And he didn't do it. So I believe that he needs to step down too. And he probably will.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in a power position, right?
Right.
You got to do that. I said it yesterday. Like, I don't know how you don't. I don't know how you look the other way. I don't understand that. I will never understand that. I don't know how you literally just say, "Ah, we'll get to it later on," or maybe we just hope it goes away. I mean, I don't know how anyone takes that approach, but we see time after time after time after time after time again that's what happens. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't believe Joe Quenneville will ever be on the bench again, personally, as a head coach.
That's just hard.
It's my early thoughts. You know, I know he's no spring chicken. It's not like he's, you know, 39 years old. So I just don't see it. And, you know, I don't have anything against him because he was the Blackhawks coach and, you know, they won 3 cups and I don't root for the Blackhawks. It has nothing to do with that. Like, I just say, Joel, you got what was coming to you, man. Like, you just can't do that. Like, you can't. You were the head coach, man. You were in charge. You were running that ship. That's your ship that was going on, and you did nothing about it. It's just, it can't be accepted. It just can't. And I will never understand how people, you know, don't address it. I don't know. The looking the other way still continues to boggle my mind. I don't understand how you really think this is not going to come to roost and it's really just truly going to go away. Like, all these people, I just feel like so many times they just think that it's just going to go away. And it's, but that's the thing. It was interesting you said that, because I've thought about that too. Like, just think about the baggage. And I don't know Joel Quenneville. It's not like I've ever, you know, I've spending time around him. I don't know his makeup. I don't know his DNA. I know my DNA would be a mess. I know 11 years of hell would be, you know, what I would be dealing with thinking about it, right? And I don't know how much he thinks about it. I don't know if it's he's been a prisoner of that moment for 11 years. I have no idea. I hope he has. I hope he's
that's a good question, himself. Darren, don't you think? Don't you think that's a question? At least that's one that I have. Is when they moved on from Aldridge the following year, did those guys ever think of it? Was it ever on their mind at that point, or was it just, you know, this is over and done with?
I hope so.
He's gone. Well, I hope but I find it hard to believe that they had it on their mind every day. But did they have some guilt tucked away somewhere? All those years, I wonder about that. Another thing I think about is now Joel Quenneville, who is the second all-time winningest coach in NHL history, when it comes time for Hall of Fame and things like that, and his legacy, where does this go? You're not going to be able to overlook it. You know, this is going to be on there. And so how much, you know, how do we look at somebody who has all of these great accolades and then one terrible, terrible mistake? You know, that, so that's another thing for another day down the road. But I do like how the hockey community, if you look on social media, so many people have been outspoken about this to try to be there for Kyle Beach.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Kyle Beach feels about that. It's kind of like better late than never. It's like, where was everybody at the time? And I wouldn't begrudge him for feeling really bitter about that on some level, but they're trying to do what they can now.
We'll come back. We'll head to Indy. We'll learn a little bit about this Colts team that the Titans have to face on Sunday. We'll talk to Bob Kravitz, who covers the team for The Athletic. He's been covering the Colts for a long time. And Indy, we'll do that on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, our show is presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here, Chase McCabe down in Atlanta, in lieu of Game 3 of the World Series. We'll get to that a little bit later. But right now we head to Indy. We find out a little bit more about this opponent that the Titans are facing on Sunday. And they're a little bit different than the first go-around when the Titans got the victory. Bob Kravitz has been nice enough to join us, covers the team, has been covering the team for a long time in that market, now doing it for The Athletic. Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
Gentlemen, how are you?
We're doing fantastic. I'll tell you what. Look, this team, I know they're not talking about it, but we could talk about it on Sports Talk Radio. How much would they love to have that Monday Night Football game back against the Ravens? Holy cow. That could end up haunting them down the road, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, if their injured kicker makes a kick or doesn't have it blocked, I mean, there are so many what-ifs you can look at. I mean, there are up 23-15 with like 5 minutes left. You figured, you know, there's about a 95% chance that Sanchez is going to be able to kick, is going to be able to kick a 35-yarder to get blocked, for crying out loud. Then at the end of regulation, he misses another field goal. Yeah, I mean, they ought to be They ought to be, you know, one game behind the Titans heading into this game.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. For the sake of our show, on Thursdays, Bob, we do a contest called Silly Underdogs, and we pick teams that are underdogs, and they have to win the game outright. And one of our panelists is former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and he had the Colts, and he was looking for his first win of the season, and he was texting us that night just howling and like, this was so easy. I told you guys the Colts are going to win. And then we started going, hold on, wait a minute, Chris, this is not over. And he's like, it's over. And boy, did we have fun that night at his expense.
Well, that's all that matters.
That's right. So, you know, the last time whenever these two teams met, Carson Wentz had two bum ankles. He's moved on past that. Where is he today with his health, Bob? And how do you think overall to this point Carson Wentz has played?
Yeah, first, his ankles are fine. You know, whether they're 100% or 98%, I don't know. But he doesn't seem to be limited. Certainly, you know, against Tennessee the first time around, he was a statue and couldn't do, you know, 70% of the things that he wanted to do. He's been terrific. I mean, this looks like a really good trade by the Colts. I went and checked his statistics after seven games and compared them to 2017 and 2018, and his quarterback rating is actually higher right now than it was in 17 and 18. So, you know, look, he's not playing at a Pro Bowl level just yet, but look, he's played one game with two bum ankles, and he played one game in a bomb cyclone, they called it, out in San Francisco, where it was very difficult to throw the football. And he's been very good, 11 touchdowns, only one pick. And that was always the knock on him, at least last year, that, you know, he tried to make plays that weren't there and threw a lot of dumb interceptions. And, you know, give Frank Reich a lot of credit. He had a lot of success with Carson back in 2017. And it looks like that relationship has been a good one once again.
Where is, speaking of relationships, what is the relationship currently with Marlon Mack and the Colts? I saw him out there, albeit in very, very limited duty, but I saw him out there Sunday night in the, you know, in that game in the pouring rain, or Monday, whenever that game was.
I'm losing track.
I guess it was Sunday night, yeah. You know, we thought he was out. He wanted a trade. His days were over in Indy. And it's been kind of quiet since all of that. So where does it sit today?
Well, the trade deadline comes up next week, and yep. I have reason to believe that he'll be let go. Well, one of the things that I've had a hard time understanding is if you've got a guy who you're clearly going to deal, why are you playing him? Mm-hmm. You know, what if he gets hurt? Then you get nothing. Look, you know, he's still a decent player. I don't think he's got the burst that he once had. Maybe it'll come back eventually, but, you know, he had a serious injury. You know, they're not using him often. I've had people tell me that they're trying to showcase him. But look, you know, teams know what Marlon Mack is all about. And, you know, he was a 1,000-yard rusher before he got hurt. So I don't understand why they're even playing him, to be perfectly honest with you. But he will almost certainly be dealt before the trade deadline next week.
Mo Alie-Cox, the Titans have had, you know, the Colts have given the Titans fits with their tight ends over the years.
Yeah.
Looks like Mo Alie-Cox, who had a really nice year last year, is kind of right back in the mix again, as kind of being the go-to guy at that position. And I know Jack Doyle is a guy that's certainly, we followed his career, and he's given the Titans fit. Right now, that position overall, how do you view that position? How much of a weapon has it been used in this little run here where they've turned things around?
Yeah, Mo Alie-Cox has become a great red zone area. You know, I say become. He's always been a guy who's really effective in the end zone. We had a guy here a couple of years ago, Eric Ebron, who had one, you know, mind-boggling great year, and then kind of felt, you know, kind of water reaches its level. But that's what Mo Alie-Cox does for the Colts. He's a big body. He's, you know, he's a former VCU basketball player for Shaka Smart. He can high point the ball. He's big. He's physical. So yeah, he's been an issue for just about everybody the Colts have played. this year. And I would suspect that he's going to be going to make an impact on Sunday.
We're talking to Bob Kravitz of The Athletic, talking Colts with him. And Bob, I think he's played in one game, but T.Y. Hilton, like, what? Number one, the health, how is he? And two, what exactly is left in the tank? And I think I asked you that when we talked to you in the preseason, but it just feels like there's just not much left.
There's not much left, and I'll be honest with you, and I've written this. I thought that they were more sentimental than smart when they brought T.Y. Hilton back. And I think that Jim Irsay, who does not really get too involved in the day-to-day, I mean, he's involved, but he doesn't get his hands in the till. When it comes to that sort of stuff, he leaves it to Chris Ballard. I thought that he got too involved in the whole thing. And again, more, you can't be sentimental in this game. I think Bill Belichick showed that for years and years, where he got rid of guys 1 year before they were done. Look, T.Y., he had a good game against Houston. He didn't practice yesterday. He's questionable for Sunday. And even if he does play, I just don't know how much he's got left. The good news for the Colts is they've got a new number one wide receiver. That's Michael Pittman Jr., who's been great. He's got a number of 100-yard games this year. He's really, really come on here in his second year. But, yeah, T.Y., to me, that made no sense. That was just, you know, that was a sentimental move that I think really didn't benefit the Colts in any tangible way.
Yeah, Michael Pittman is where I was going to go next. He's already surpassed his yard total from his rookie year. But what is the biggest difference that you've seen in him? Is it simply just a guy that needed a year in the NFL to kind of see what the NFL life is like? Or is there something else that you've seen in his growth from year one to year two?
No, I think what you mentioned there is right. And keep in mind, it was tough for all rookies last year. Jonathan Taylor is another one, because you didn't have the off-season training because of COVID. You didn't have preseason because of COVID. And a lot of these guys just weren't ready to roll come the start of the season. And look, Pittman's been terrific. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor, from the second half of the season until now, has been spectacular and would be, you know, a Pro Bowler if it wasn't for that Derrick Henry guy you've got in Tennessee. Pittman's a big body. He's intense. He's physical. And he's great at drawing defensive pass interference calls, as we saw in that San Francisco game. So, and I think it helps too that he's got a quarterback in Carson Wentz who can go deep, who can take those shots and is willing to take those shots. And Pittman is the kind of guy who can go up and get the ball and win 50-50 balls.
Something we've talked about a lot, as you can imagine, has been the Titans' offensive line and their injuries and struggles that they've had this year. But as of late, they've done a better job of protecting Ryan Tannehill. So what kind of conversations has the Colts' pass rush had about getting to him?
Well, I mean, the thing they really got to be careful about is him on the bootleg. I mean, if I remember correctly, he ran for like 50, 55 yards in the first game. I mean, Derrick Henry, look, he's going to get 100 yards walking off the bus. But he didn't kill the Colts last game. I thought that Ryan Tannehill was the real problem, especially on the bootleg, especially when he got out of the pocket and was able to run for yards. The Colts' biggest problem is they don't have a pass rush. And if anything is going to keep them from taking that next step and making the playoffs, it's the pass rush. I think everything else is coming together. Their secondary is a little dicey with Rakia Sin out. I don't know if he's going to be back this week. He is practicing. But, yeah, it's their pass rush. Quiddy Pay was their first-round pick. They let go of Danico Autry, who you're getting to watch every week, and he's a good player. And they got rid of Justin Houston. And, you know, they wanted their young edge rushers to develop, and it hasn't happened. Quiddy doesn't have a sack this year, and it's been a slow start all around for their pass rush.
Bob, how much better is the Colts offensive line than it was in the first meeting when it was sort of in disarray?
Oh, 100 times better. Well, look at it this way. I mean, Fisher at left tackle, he's off to a slow start. He's going to be a guy that you're just going to have to wait on because he's coming off the Achilles injury, the Achilles surgery. And even he admits that he's not been right. But with every passing game, he seems to play better. Quentin Nelson is back at left guard. Center Ryan Kelly's fine. Right guard, you've got two guys who are playing, you know, well enough. And it looks like Braden Smith, their right tackle, is going to be back for this game. So they will have their offensive line completely intact for the Tennessee game, and that's very good news for Carson Wentz's health.
Bob, leave us with this. You know, I was looking at the Colts' next couple of games. They should roll in those games, and it really illustrates how big this game is. If the Colts win this game, in theory, they could be on top of the division in another couple of weeks as the Titans continue to go through their really tough stretch of the schedule. So I know they're really circling this game up in Indy.
Oh, there's no doubt. And, you know, Darius Leonard, God bless him, he says whatever's on his mind. You know, football players, you know how they are. The next game is the biggest game, yada, yada, yada. Well, he came right out and said, this is a must-win game. And you know what? He's absolutely right. Because you lose this game, not only do you fall three behind Tennessee, but you add in the tiebreaker, you're basically four games behind Tennessee the second half of the season, mm-hmm. but we got 17 games, so that's not exactly right, but you know what I'm saying. And so, yeah, the Colts, this is an absolute must-win game for the Colts, or they're going to be fighting it out for a wild card. And you look at all the teams who are playing well and are in wild card contention, I think that's going to be a long shot for them. So I really do believe winning the AFC South is probably their best bet for making the playoffs, and this game will tell us everything.
Mm. Good stuff, Bob, as always. Really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your Friday. Thanks for doing this, as always, and we'll see how this thing plays out on Sunday.
Okay, good talking to you guys. Take care.
Same. Bob Kravitz, he's been in that market covering that team for a very long time, and he just joined us. He covers them now for The Athletic. We'll come back and discuss that on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Listen to the World Series on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9. That's brought to you by 312 Pizza Company. That makes me hungry.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight, Game 3, series tied at 1. Strohs and Braves down at Truist Park. First pitch, listen to this, 7:09. Like, where do they come up with these times? Can't you just make it 7:10?
Very precise.
7:09. Why? 312 Pizza Company in Germantown is the home of the best pizza in Nashville. Head over to 312 Pizza Company to grab a bite, a beer, and watch some October baseball, which will spill over into November.
Yes, and I appreciate them for also jumping on board for my coverage here from Atlanta. So, again, 312 Pizza, great place. So, I appreciate them.
Well, did they send pizza with you on your trip?
No.
Well, you
they
made
didn't.
A, you then. That's,
I know.
You negotiated wrong.
I know. I need to.
You
I
could
need
be
to
eating 312 Pizza right now while you're talking to us.
I could, but that means I just have to go see them now. And I enjoy going in to see them. So, 312 is a great place.
Okay.
So, that's what that means when I get back.
We have to remember this the next time we're over, you know, at First Horizon, because we've been over there too many times and have not frequented 312 Pizza Company, right? We have to do that.
I know.
I have been there. It's very good. It's legit. But you do have to understand that it's a Blackhawks sports bar.
Oh.
So
it is.
They
yeah.
do
oh.
they do have Blackhawks stuff over
which,
there. So
which means they're deep
the pizza,
dish.
Oh, yeah. No, the pizza is legit Chicago, and that's why you go. But you just have to understand that you will be amongst some Blackhawk stuff.
Okay. Okay. Some
In
stuff.
In fact, I'll tell you a really funny story. When they first opened several years ago, the Predators, we had a little broadcast luncheon over there. We brought the entire broadcast team over there, and everybody's wearing their staff shirts and everything like that. And we look at the menu and it says the, you know, it says something like, we watch Blackhawk games here or something like that, you know? And we were like, hey, well,
awkward.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Oops.
That, by the way, that's funny. That's how you learned it was a Blackhawks watch party place.
That's exactly. Yeah.
This line on the Titans-Colts game has done an about-face.
Yes, it has.
When we came on here Monday, the Titans were the favorite. They're not only not the favorite, it's getting close to a field goal going the other direction. Everything is being put on Indianapolis. The line is going the other way. That Jeff, that kid, little boy, comes turning around the corner, and then all of a sudden he just turns around and goes right back down the hallway. That's what that line has done. Titans are the favorite. Wait a minute. I think it's 2.5 the last time I checked.
Yeah, 2.5. Now, so I'm looking at VegasInsider.com, which is a great website that shows you what all the books have it at. Now, it says this line opened at 2.5, but you're right, Indy minus 2.5. But you're right. On Monday, the Titans were a 1.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
And now it's back to Indy as a 2.5 favorite across the board. Every book has it at 2.5. So it's interesting.
Clearly, the sharps were not listening to you on Monday when you said this should be a layup for the Titans.
Yeah, and I'm a little disappointed because I talked to Ryan earlier today, and he says that if I'm wrong, that'll be a promo, but if I'm right, it won't. And I'm just not a fan of that. So.
Well, I don't think that's fair, but I definitely think if you're wrong, it should be a promo for sure.
That's fine, and I will eat it and take my medicine, and you guys can have fun at my expense.
Do you feel any regret saying that? Would you like to take it back? Would you like a mulligan if you had the opportunity?
Darren, I can't run straight. I definitely can't run backwards, so I wouldn't be a good DB. So, no, I'm not taking anything back.
Okay.
No backpedaling here.
Okay.
Double down.
I said what I said. Double down.
He's digging in.
I am in.
I remember at least you knew we were paying attention because you're like, the Titans should win this. And both of us were like, what?
Well, I knew as soon as I said it, one of you was going to be like, wait, what? Come again?
Yeah, they should win. I mean, they can win, but I think this one's going to be tough. This one's going to be hard. This one's going to be – I would be surprised if this game is not coming down to the last possession. I think it's going to be close. Don't you think? I mean, does anybody see it being lopsided?
I think it'll be close. I don't think it's going to be like
either
last
way
week against Kansas City. Yeah, either way. I mean, I actually think and hope, just from looking at it from a football sense and a fan sense, I actually think it'll be a pretty good game. I think that it could be a fun, entertaining game. But you're right. I think it comes down to the last possession.
How about we do this? How about we say this? Because we had a nice conversation with Bud Dupree yesterday. We had Imani Hooker on last week. We've had some really good conversations here. Let's just say this. If it comes down to a close game and it's determined by a kick, what if Randy Bullock kicks the game winner? We should talk to him next week, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
This is a story that really is pretty interesting because as much as we've talked about the kicker situation over the last 2 years, 2+ years, and we're like, what is going on? I mean, think about what they started with in camp. Neither one of those guys exist. This has been the Randy Bullock show. And you know what? He's done a really good job.
He has. I mean,
do you guys
no
feel the same way? I mean, there has been no issues, really, with, nobody's cringing when Randy Bullock goes out there. He's got an interesting body shape for an NFL player, but he is a kicker.
He has a nickname.
But nobody's cringing. I mean, we've had a lot of cringeworthy moments whenever a Titans kicker's running out on the field. It hasn't been that case at all. At least I haven't.
I will say that it has been less and less of every time he lines up to kick of, oh, no, please, please make this. I mean, it's more along the lines of every kicker now of, you're not going to hit everything, but you feel much more comfortable with it. with him. And so, I mean, I don't, he's the kicker in my mind. He's the kicker moving forward. I don't see any reason to make a change to Sam Thicken or who anyone else. I mean, he's the guy the rest of the way, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't even really know why it's a subject right now. I'm just bringing it up because I feel like nobody's really talking about it. I think it's been a pretty interesting story, a position that we had no idea if this was not going to, you know, if this position was going to hamper them yet again like it has in the past and haunt them, which is an appropriate word to use as we're a couple days away from Halloween. And it hasn't. It's been none of the above. And I don't think any of us really felt that way in preseason and in camp. We thought probably it's got a real chance to bite them in the you-know-what yet again this season, and it hasn't.
No.
Has he been absolutely perfect? No. Has any kicker in the league, to my knowledge, been absolutely perfect? I don't think so. I'd have to go look at the stats, but I see it. You know, I mean, we've already had record-breaking misses early on in the season, so I don't feel like there's anybody out there in the league that's perfect as a kicker.
This is his stat line. 6 games, 15 attempts, 13 made field goals, extra points, 18 attempts, 17 made. That's not bad. That's solid numbers right there. You take that all day long. And he's hit 1 from 50 plus. He's perfect there. And his misses have been between 40 and 49.
I'm looking, and I do not see a kicker in the league who's perfect. Let's see. Koo in Atlanta is 13 for 13 on PATs, which is pretty low compared. I mean, like Matt Prater for Arizona's kicked 30 extra points. Koo's kicked 13. And he's 10 for 10. So it's a lighter workload. He's the only kicker. And Santos in Chicago, again, light workload because their offense stinks. And he's 8 for 8 on field goals, 11 for 11 on PAT. So I guess if we used a number of, you know, 12 or more field goals, which is most of the kickers, that's a pretty good, you know, that's a good amount. 12 or more, like most everybody has done that except for those two guys. Nobody's perfect.
And if you're perfect, you're probably due to miss one at some point. You're going to miss one. We talk about this a lot. The expected percentage is between 80 and 85% these days. And so the bar's high, but I think you guys have been illustrating. They've gotten pretty good kicking since the first week. And knock on wood, you hope it continues.
Yeah, even Justin Tucker has a miss this year between 40 and 49.
And he might be the greatest of all time.
I mean, he's right. He's unbelievable. Bass for Buffalo is really good. He's got a miss. It was 50. It was a 50-plus, so okay. So those are your two best. And, you know, a guy like Mason Crosby's been doing it forever. We saw that horrific game in Cincinnati. You know, that was awful. Let's see. Who's the other guy that I'm thinking of that we've identified as a really, really good kicker? No longer, you know, Zerline, those type of guys.
About, like, still kicking?
Yeah. Oh, Butker. That's who I was looking for. Butker's missed one. By the way, their field goal attempts are really low. He's attempted 8 field goals this year. 8. Kansas City's kicker. 8 field goals. He's 7 of 8.
And that's the thing that's hard to find when you're just looking at the regular stats is the context of each field goal. Is each field goal that you take, are you already ahead 28 to 10 and this is a field goal to make it 31 to 10? Or is it 16-13, you're down and you need this to tie it up? Because that I think absolutely has an effect on how much pressure is out there. And I think that's where you have to probably give Bullock some credit. He's made some pretty good pressure kicks. He missed the one that we all remember that would have given them the tie against the Jets. And that still could come into play down the road. But I think he's made some pretty good pressure kicks.
At this point, if you're a Titans fan, and I give you a choice that you can have Suck Up back or you can keep Randy Bullock, what do you think people would say?
Well, Suck Up has struggled this year. He's missed three field goals.
He's 8 of 11.
And he's missed an extra point, too.
Yep.
It's a good question, though.
But I will say this. You know who's attempted the most 50-plus yarders this year?
I don't know.
No, that was – I thought it was Suck Up.
No,
I was wrong.
He's only had one.
It's Cano. Sorry. It's Cano. Sorry. I thought it was Suck Up.
Suck Up last year –
Greg Joseph, too. Greg Joseph and Gano both have attempted the 6 50-plus yarders. That's
wow, that's a lot.
I know. That is a lot.
Yeah.
That is going to affect your percentage.
Suck Up last year was money. It was 90%.
By the way, both of those guys, Gano, the Giants kicker, and Joseph, the Vikings kicker, nobody's really – Prater for Arizona's attempted 5, but those two guys are both 5 of 6 for 50-plus. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty darn good. Yeah, no, I would say probably the answer is, as much as we really like Suck Up, I mean, I don't know. It seems like I've watched a lot of their games. Even his makes, it's like, whew, boy, they're just like just inside the post. Like I said, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but, I mean, Randy Bullock, not only – look at his makes. I mean, how many times has he just been right down the middle, easy? Like you see it, it's up, and it's like, oh, that's way good.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but right now I just don't see – I wouldn't touch that. It's working.
Yeah.
It's working now.
That is what – if we've learned nothing – through this whole discussion the last 2 years is we've learned how tricky it is to find the kicker that's always going to be reliable. You would have thought Gostkowski, no problem, but we know he had his issues. They had all the issues the year before that. It was so hard to come to Bullock, and you're only as good as your last game. You guys were so sold on Rodrigo Blankenship, and he's fallen on hard times. He got hurt, so – and then ironically, Michael Badgley shows up and starts kicking for them. We started laughing. We're like, what? Michael Badgley? Because he got booed right out of the stadium. So it just shows how hard it is, I think, sometimes to get the reliable kicker, even though a kicker is expected to hit 85% of his field goals.
All right. I want you guys to play along with this. So we'll see if you can do this because I thought it was interesting. And there's a reason I'm asking this, and you'll find out. But – I saw this morning on Get Up, they did top 5 scariest offensive players in the league, okay? And it's just anybody on offense. There's no, like, position, it can be this. Top 5 scariest offensive players. That's the category. This is Rob Ninkovich, okay, that did this. Can you – I'll just go back and forth. Willie, I'll start with you, Chase, because you went, See if you guys how good you are. Top, and this is the whole league. This is not AFC or NFC. Top 5 scariest offensive players. I saw this on Get Up this morning, according to Rob Ninkovich. Chase, I'll start with you. See if you can name one.
Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry is number 3, which I was like, oh, okay.
I would have had him 1.
Yep, okay. I know. I was like, we can debate that, but Derrick Henry's on the list. Willie.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it was scary as in puts fear in the defense, not scared that they're going to screw up.
I don't believe that was part of the criteria. I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was like literally like scares the defense.
It's like we've got Donick in at left tackle. That's pretty scary. He's going to screw up.
By the way, to your point, so there you go. I just want to let you know, Kendall Lamb is not on the list, okay? So there you go.
Good.
Okay. Dylan Raidunce is not on the list.
Okay, how about Josh Allen?
Josh Allen is a really good guess and not on the list.
Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, come on. Of course not.
Hmm.
Not on the list. Willie.
Are there quarterbacks on the list?
I said it can be any offensive position. So, I mean, it's any position on offense.
Wow.
Josh Allen.
Kyler
not.
Murray.
Kyler Murray. Saw him last night lose for the first time this season. Not on the list.
Devontae.
This guy's got something against quarterbacks.
Apparently. Well, Devontae Adams.
Devontae Adams. Most identified as the best receiver in the game. Not on the list.
What the hell?
This is why I'm asking it. I know.
Jonathan Taylor.
Okay. Not on the list.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Not on the list.
So, Kelsey.
Okay, let me help you with this. Okay, before you just hold that thought just for 1 second. The only running back is Derrick Henry. Okay, so let me just say that.
Okay.
So now you don't guess any more running backs. He's the only running back on the list.
Travis Kelsey,
right? I mean, come on. Like, he's the best tight end in the game. Everybody knows that. Not on the list.
This list sucks.
Tyreek Hill.
There we go. Okay. Tyreek Hill's got to be on there, right? Yeah, he's number four. So Derrick Henry, three. Tyreek Hill,
number
four.
One or two?
You haven't gotten one or two. You're not going to get two. One, I'm ashamed that you got. I mean, come on.
Rodgers?
I'm embarrassed. Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he won last night in Arizona.
He won
without
last
his
night,
top
but...
three wide receivers. Not on the list.
So the quarterbacks are just not there. They're not there.
No, quarterback is number one, and you still haven't named him.
DeSean Jackson. I mean, Lamar Jackson. DeSean Jackson.
DeSean Jackson is fast, like Tyreek Hill, not on the list.
Lamar Jackson.
DeSean Watson is a good quarterback, not on the list.
So Lamar.
Lamar. Not on the list.
What?
What?
Not on the list.
So you said the number one is a quarterback.
Yes.
And
you guys have named you've named like nine quarterbacks and still haven't named a number one.
Is it
well,
Brady?
Well, I guess we should have considered it's Ninkovich, so it's got to be Brady.
It's
of
Brady?
Of course, guys. Why do you think I said his name like three times?
Ugh.
TB12, come
this
on, man.
This list sucks.
So you think there's a little bias there that he's got Brady, but no, none of the other quarterbacks?
Well, there's a reason why I told you who was doing the list. So
that's
Tom Brady's
brutal.
One. You're never going to get two. Even though he's having a great season, if you have him on your fantasy team, you would get it. But nobody goes there. Cooper Kupp is number two. Mm. So Tom Brady, Cooper Kupp, Derrick Henry, Tyreek Hill, and number five, an offensive lineman.
Offensive lineman?
Offensive lineman
I would never
is
get
number
this.
Five.
I got nothing, unless it's Roger Saffold.
I said there was a reason I was bringing this up. Derrick Henry's on the list, and...
So it is Roger Saffold.
Quentin Nelson.
Wow,
so
that's a
according to Rob
list.
Ninkovich, this game on Sunday has two of the five scariest offensive players in the league, according to him. Quentin
All
Nelson
right.
and Derrick Henry.
All
you can agree
right.
or disagree. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm just the messenger. I'm just passing along.
That's like trying to read the mind of Ninkovich. I think that is just – I don't
crap.
Know what the criteria is. I'm not sure about that exercise right there.
Threw something up against a dartboard.
Well, I mean, one, yeah. you should have known one, right? I mean, because of his past, I mean, you should have known he was going – TB12, come on.
Well, yeah, but he's a media member now. Come on, you got to be biased.
Well, he is biased. That's why he has Tom Brady.
Or unbiased.
All right, we'll come back.
The other one.
Big Joe on the go. Could use some 312 pizza. I'm hungry. You too.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
We'll find out the top games of the week. We'll do that on the other side as we begin hour number two. That's next here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.